Welcome to the Never Settle podcast. My name is Mel Clark, and I am passionate about helping people realize that settling for second best is no longer an option, and that everyone deserves to live the life they truly desire. Hey guys, today it's my great honor to introduce Claire Taylor-Powell. Claire is my acupuncturist, and she was the pivotal moment for me when I realized I was living a lie in my marriage and changed my life. That was 10 years ago. So it was the greatest honor for me to be able to interview her today. So you can all share in the beauty and her wisdom that Claire gives. She gives such amazing guidance for people that are living inauthentically, basically, which is a subject very close to my heart. So sit back, get a cuppa, and enjoy. This is Claire. Okay, welcome, lovely listeners. Today it is a real privilege for me. I love this woman. Claire Powell, Taylor Powell. Cool, crikey, I nearly forgot your surname then. So Claire has been my acupuncturist for 10 years, as we've just discovered. I was just working it out. And Claire was the main reason, She was the reason why my life changed. I was in a marriage that I shouldn't have been in. And when I met Claire and we had some acupuncture sessions, so Claire's an acupuncturist amongst many other things that she does. And it was the realization with a session with Claire that almost had me hit over the head with a sledgehammer. That's how it felt at the time, that I was living a lie. And from that moment on, it wasn't an easy journey. There was lots of tears and there was lots of denial by me, but I finally got there. But she's changed my life, or we've changed my life forever. And I will be forever grateful to this lady, and she has a very special place in my heart. So I would like to welcome the lovely Claire. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Mel. It's a joy to be here with you today, the day after my birthday, which seems very, very auspicious.
Yes.
We've met up again because it's been a while with lockdown and all of that.
Oh, it's been, yeah, I know, because I was coming to you just before and I had a cold, so I stayed away.
That's it.
And then we had lockdown. So I really do want a session at some point, Claire. So,
So
Claire, I mean, I'm so excited to have you on because you are such an inspiration to me. You're such a tonic, so different to most people that I know. And, you know, really, I feel, that this podcast has been a result of, you know, that pivotal day back in 2010 where I took the leap of faith that was changing my life and not settling anymore for second best. So, yes, I've got you to, I've just had truth bumps all over my body then. So you're responsible for the podcast, Claire.
Well, yes, I'm pleased to be part of it. Pleased to be part of it.
Yes. So, yeah, so happy to have you on. And because, you know, I would just love you to share some of your story, really, and some of your slightly wacky wisdom that I love. And, you know, I think you've been instrumental in changing lots of people's lives. The people that want to change their life, the people that are ready to change their lives, you certainly know how to guide them into that different space. But what about your story? Because you used to be in the RAF a long time ago.
Yes, Mel. And I was thinking about this on the dog walk this morning, because as you know, I can go on a bit. And, you know, this podcast could take 3 months, and I'd still be here talking probably to myself. You've gone off, traveled the world by then. I'm still going on. So I was trying to look at how could I sort of, you know, bring this, crystallize it down into a few key points, so as not to bore your viewers and listeners too much. And what it came to me that we start off our journey, I think, from observation, from my own personal perspective, the majority of humans start off their journey on Earth, and we'll just remind ourselves, my belief is that we are souls, divine souls, incarnating in human form. And it's the hardest part of our soul development journey that there is. I think, you know, if anyone's laughing at us, the gods up there, they're saying, oh, you picked the, you know, lucky dip. Oh, unlucky, you got Earth. And actually, there are days when I feel that way. And there are days when, like yesterday, when I was eating a lot of coffee and walnut cake,
Yes.
And I thought, you know, it's great to be human. It's great to be human. I think the curry was a little step too far yesterday, but you know what? I pressed on, and I'm probably regretting it today, but it was lovely in the moment. So I feel that most of us humans explore firstly, as we come into this world, we forget, as part of the soul contract, we forget that we're souls, that we're divine light, and we just think that we are flesh and bone. You know, this is all I am. And we spend a variety amount of time, various amount of time, exploring what it's like to be a human and limited as a human. Mm. And we tend to be controlled by our egoic self. And I think there are two egos in play as a human. I think there's the ego that allows us to differentiate. It allows me to differentiate myself from you and from the chair and the screen and the dog. So that's a positive way of separation, which is very interesting for a soul to experience that, because, as you know, the soul sense is that we are part of all that is. You know, there is just one unifying consciousness, manifesting or otherwise, non-manifesting, and maybe previous incarnations on different planets, different multidimensional realms, we've experienced a degree of separation. But I do believe the most A-level experience for a soul is to come to Earth and experience in our mindset total separation, total duality, polarity. So when we come in, we're operating from a place of fear. The other ego, the human egoic self, operates from a place of survival, primal instinctual survival. And that is generally based on fear, fight or flight, freeze, fight, flight. So you and I've talked at length over the decade. My God, you're looking good, my love. You're looking good. We've talked a lot about that, the behavior that comes from a fear-based vibration, where we, and this is so apt for your podcast theme, where we stick with something, because actually, how many times have we heard ourselves say, better the devil you know than nothing at all? Yeah. A sense of being lonely, you know, singular, isolated, rejected, abandoned. Actually, we'll go through anything to avoid that. And we'll stay and cling to something, even though it's injurious, even though it's self-sabotaging and damaging. Hey, at least we know it. We can develop strategies to deal with that rubbish. And then I believe, and I'll put my hand up, it took me 42 years to get to that point when I suddenly decided, I would say there was a pivot point in my life based on a number of very extreme events that happened very, very close together. But it shocked me out of that almost sleepwalking state of, this is how I live life as a human. And it was ugly. You know it as well as I've shared it with you. Self-sabotage, low self-worth to no self-worth, controlling, manipulative, fear-based. You know, I explored the entire spectrum of human emotion and behavior at that end, shall we say.
Yeah.
And I got to this point, 42, and I thought, you know, enough. I've actually hit the buffers now. I can't face living my life like this. And I am a slow learner, and I hold my hand up to that. And I wonder, looking back, might I have learned that lesson a little quicker? But I've made a sprung at the age of 26 into this lovely, happy state. But I actually believe everything I went through was for a reason, to get me to the place where I am now that gives me the confidence and the courage to pursue a path of authenticity. Mm. And, you know, we make choices. You know, we're not victims anymore. That was 0 to 42. I was the victim, the martyr role. Now I stand on my own two feet, I make choices, and I know what the consequences are of those choices. And I'm happy to take them, because I know that to do anything else is not authentic, is not aligned with my highest good. And what would be the point? Because I've spent 42 years perfecting being anything but authentic. So, you know, it's, as you say, it can still be a rocky road. Woo-hoo, we can still have some little upsets along the way. But ultimately, I feel the path, what I would call the path home, home to me, as I remember myself to be this soul incarnating in human form, something so much bigger than flesh and bone. Now I start to expand my conscious awareness, and I can see the limitless possibilities of having the most fabulous life on earth. In the old days, you and I would have had to sit on a mountain for 35 years, meditating, just breathing air, you know, to be the wise sage. And then we would become enlightened as we died. You'd have to leave the planet physically to be enlightened and to reach that ecstatic state of connection with all that is. And now we can do it now. We can do it on this earth as a human. And that's the astonishing evolutionary change in our soul growth. So that's why I think I'm here, having done what I've done and been through what I've been through, and being very happy that I've made that journey. And I don't think I could have short-circuited it with and still get to where I am now, because all of those experiences are valid.
Yeah.
You and I could be weeping in yet another glass of wine about, you know, yet another disaster, romantically or career choice or whatever. But actually, that experience helps us to make more informed choices next time. So we don't have to keep repeating the same old, sometimes we do. But actually, as we get older and wiser, we don't have to keep stepping onto that hamster wheel of fate. We can make choices and we can take different directions. And I think the confidence that you get when you step out alone and you say, okay, I'm going for this. I'm not going to muddle around anymore. I'm not going to, you know, fiddle around the edges while Rome burns. I'm actually going to go for this all in. The delight, the payback, the reward is astonishing. More than we could ever have believed possible when we were playing the victim and doing the martyr thing, but for however long we did it at the first part of our journey.
Sorry, I was going to say, would you share what... You said 42 was your time to change.
Yeah.
Was there a particular thing that created that?
Yes. It was, I think what happened was I'd reached the zenith of my inauthentic life. So everything that I'd been doing came to a wonderful crescendo. So the second meaningful relationship came to an end. And in fact, it was 3 days of hell, and I'll share that. My mum suffered a stroke unexpectedly. She was quite well in many ways, little health impairments, but actually generally well in the heart department and the mind. She suffered a massive stroke, lost consciousness, and died 3 days later. I was in the funeral parlour. There were some family catastrophic events around my siblings, which I won't share, it's private, but they were going through their own long, dark night of the soul. And it was all the catalyst was mum dying.
Yeah.
I was in the funeral parlour on my own because my brother and sister had had to go off and attend to family disasters. And I rang my boyfriend and said, I'll be home soon. I'm just choosing what mother's going to wear in the coffin, you know, on my own. And he said, well, I'm not coming home. I'm sorry. He said, I'm not coming home. So 12 years of a relationship, which had been stuttering for two. We should have left it up after 10, but I always overstay my welcome.
His timing was pants.
So that timing was great because it had to be, you know what, Mel, and you and I have spoken about this. If something is broken and you spent years fixing it and you've been gluing it together and putting the sticky tape over and putting your head in the sand and pretending it's all okay, really, and then it's not, and then I can struggle through. My personal experience is if something is so woefully broken, but you haven't got the strength to actually put it down as it should be done, someone has to behave in such a way that is so utterly intolerable that they give you the courage to say enough now. I can't accept. So him leaving me while I was in the funeral parlour was sufficiently awful for me to say, okay, it's done. Because I'd spent 2 years trying to say that to him and he'd spent 2 years trying to say that to me. Right. And we just kept coming back to the same, we don't know how else to be. We don't know who else we are. If it's not this, what is it? So we hung on in there. But that was sufficiently awful and brutal that I then had the courage to say it's done. He knew that, but at least one of us had to say it. So I was able to say it. It was a shocking 3 days. And the beauty of it all was, I've been told by many mediums that my mum was always going to go at that time and that she was deeply saddened by the shock waves that her passing set out. But actually, it was the most perfect catalytic energy for us all my siblings and myself, to all look at our lives and go, Jesus, this is all nuts. It's all rubbish. And we all made drastic personal domestic changes in the moment, pretty much. Mm. So it was an extraordinary time. And I never looked back. I had 3 years in the wilderness. I remember having a reading a tarot reading on holiday with my girlfriend, because she was recently single. I was very single and partly bereaved with mum passing. Dad was still with me. And we went to holiday to lick our wounds, if you like, and we had a reading, and hers was quite good. And lady looked at my cards and she said, well, you've got 3 years in the wilderness. Well, thanks very much. Yeah, right. I really needed to hear that. Sorry, that's my clock going off. And do you know, I did have 3 years in the wilderness. I had the void. And it was a strange place to be. It was, I'll just wait for the clock to finish. The RSPB clock strikes, the owl strikes.
At, oh, it's an owl, is it?
It's an owl. So I knew I didn't want to go back to being that person. She was done. She was just a mess. It was just torturous to be her, to be honest. And I'd flog that one to death. So, but I didn't know who I was. That was the strange thing. I'd spent so long being who I wasn't, but it sort of was me, but it was the part of me that was done. Mm. It was the egoic self that was going from fear. But I didn't yet have a concept of who I was, because, you know, I just hadn't really been her probably since the age of five. It was probably the last time I'd been remotely me. So it took 3 years of floundering around. I did internet dating, disaster after disaster. my friends loved that 3 years because they were royally entertained by the disaster.
Comes up over dinner many times.
Many times. But again, each time the chap I dated was a mirror of where I was. So over 3 years, the men became less mad and less dysfunctional and more normal because I was getting to that place. And then I just started to reach out. And the first course I did was neuro-linguistic programming, an NLP practitioner and teacher course and coaching course. And that was the beginning of this. Literally, I turned around and started heading for home. And then I discovered acupuncture. I was having treatment and thought, I want to do this for a living. I discovered color mirrors, sound healing, started to develop my channeling skills using oracle cards, and just effectively just working with energy, being much more open and receptive and tuned into energy. Never look back.
Yeah.
Never look back. And the last internet date I had, well, we've just clocked up 13 years.
Ah.
And he's my twin flame, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, he was always there waiting for me.
He's moved in now, hasn't he?
Moved in November, yeah.
How's it been?
Yeah, fantastic. Can you imagine? He moved in November. He kept working as a consultant till March, 2 days before the lockdown. So I never saw him, pretty much. He was out doing all sorts of stuff, work stuff. And then he moved in. I had COVID and I said, don't come home. And he said, oh, rubbish to that. I'll be fine.
Right.
And he does have a strong constitution. So I was sort of day five of COVID and he just moved in. And then that was it, the lockdown. And we've spent longer together in lockdown than we had in 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, well, if that's going to be a test.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. We got on. We've just it's like we've been together forever.
Aww.
I know. Wonderful. I know. Worth waiting for. Worth waiting for. Worth journeying for.
Yeah.
In truth. But I was also thinking about, you know, is this free will? Is this fate? Is it destiny? And it occurred to me that I had my astrological birth chart done by an astrologer called Pam Gregory, who I absolutely rate. She lives in the New Forest, beautiful lady, met her a number of times on workshops. And about 3 years ago, she drew up my chart for me. And it absolutely had to the day, the RAF experience. So I had a strong militaristic theme, which I know I've had in past lives. So the first part of my incarnation was, you know, joining the Air Force, air traffic controller and all sorts, was absolutely where I should have been. And then it was at 42 on the bloody astrological chart, apologies for the swear word. That was my pivot point. That was my, you know, literally return home point. Couldn't believe it. And then it became deeply mystical. I've got Mercury, Neptune, the Sun. I've got all sorts of wondrous sort of planetary arrangements for this second part of my life that absolutely fit what I'm doing. So I orchestrate. It occurred to me for the first time today, actually, Mel, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to review my thoughts and clear my thinking. I've often wondered, how does astrology and the soul contract work together? Are they a lucky coincidence? Are they, you know, two things that work sort of dynamically but came from different vibrations? And I thought, actually, from my perspective, I wrote my soul contract sitting looking at my birth chart. So if I incarnate on July 3rd, and I think it was 1511 hours, the afternoon, this is my planetary arrangement. So this is going to support me in exploring life to the full in this way. So, if I wanted to start off with the human ego self and look at individuation, polarity, separation, and fear, brilliant. Go and be in the military. It's absolutely perfect. Be that warrior energy from a place of individuality. And then if you want to leave that behind because you've explored it and you've nailed it, shall we say, then let's look at the other side. So I've done the human side, really the whole gamut of human activity. I've bloody done it, been there, seen it, and the t-shirt. And then if you want to do the spiritual self, great, let's look at the astrological alignments and the potentials. And if you want to do it, Clary, it's all there for you. Go do it. And that's what I've done, without even knowing, I might add, because I only had the birth chart done 3 years ago, and I started to study acupuncture in 2007.
What drew you to acupuncture? How did that transition happen?
So after my 3 years of nightmarish times, I was having acupuncture. I moved house. So my boyfriend and I split up. It was his house, so I had to move out. I bought a house around the corner, and I was still in uniform. I was still in the Air Force in those days. So I was coming home from work one day, and my neighbour but one, little Terry, a little wave to Terry, she knocked my door and she said, "Oh, I notice you're in uniform. You've just moved in. How are you doing?" And she took one look at my face and she said, "Well, you need a drink." A very insightful woman, that girl. So I was round hers, two bottles of wine later, and my whole life story came out, the tragedy of it. And she said, "You need some acupuncture." And I actually remember saying to her, "What's that?" There was a day I didn't know what acupuncture was. It's a strange time, isn't it? You can actually, draw a line in the sand before acupuncture, after acupuncture, before COVID, after COVID.
Yeah.
BCAC. But so I started having treatment with a very, very magical lady. She had one foot in this dimension and one foot in the fifth dimension, no doubt about it. She said, "I have a spirit guide. He's a Native American Indian. He works with me." And this is how unaware I was. This is the world I've been living in. And I said, "Oh, where is he?" And she said, "He's standing over there." And I went, "Well, I can't see him." I thought it was real. I thought she was talking about a real Native American Indian who was just going to sit on into the treatment room. She said, "He's a spirit guide." And I said, "What's that?" Anyway, I had a lot of catching up to do, Mel.
Good.
But it was such a magical experience. She brought me out of the black hole, I bounced on the bottom of that black pit of despair many a time. But she gave me the tools to start to find my way out. And I've always maintained, I don't heal anybody. I just reawaken the ability to heal yourself in my patients, remind them. You and I talked at length about our authenticity and trying to find that truth. And if we're not living the truth, what would we do about it? And it's not that I showed you where to go. You already knew all of this.
Yeah.
It's just we have an amazing ability to batten down the truth if the truth looks threatening. And any change is threatening when we're in a bad place, because we're only just hanging on to that bloody place. To try and put another dynamic in us feels horrendous. So we'll just go for the status quo, thanks. So all I feel I do is just act as that catalytic energy for someone to reawaken to their own truth, their own healing capacity, their own multidimensional awesomeness. And once they step into that, oof, they're away. they're away. And that's what this lady did for me. And I never looked back.
So you had your treatment. Obviously, you had probably had more than one with her.
Oh, God, I had years.
And then, so did you think, I want to do this straight away? Or was it a bit of a process?
Process. Because at the time when I went to see her, I was in such a mess. I really was. I was functioning. I was a functioning catastrophe. But it wasn't pretty. I was just getting through each day, to be honest. So she needed to do some work to just help my energy to recover its equilibrium. It's like if you've got a floodplain, you're not going to start sowing seeds for the next harvest until you've drained it. You've dug your drainage ditches, you've cleared them all out, you've prepared the soil, and only then can you start to actually plant the seeds for the new growth.
Yeah.
So there's quite a bit of sort of mending and putting back together before I feel that we can actually launch into who we are, who we really are. We've got to have quite a firm foundation in order to take that leap of faith. Otherwise, the minute it gets tough, we'll just fall back into the old ways, the old habituated responses, because that's what served us. And the pullback can be very compelling, as we know. Better the devil you know. So, yeah, a bit of mending, I think about 18 months of mending and healing. And then I was just lying on the couch and I already knew I was going to give in my notice to the Air Force. I had to give a year's notice. And I thought, I'm going to have to earn a living.
Yes, wow.
Yeah. I used to, on some branches, it's 18 months. You have to plan ahead. Mm-hmm. It's quite good because you can really prepare then, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I was just lying on the couch, you know, sometime about, a year before I left the Air Force. And I thought, oh, my God, that's it. This is all my questions answered. This is my new career. And went and studied in Warwick, in the acupuncture college at Warwick. And the only reason I moved to Warwick was because that's where the acupuncture college was that my practitioner had studied at. He could have said, I studied in New Zealand, I'd have gone. I was always going to go to the same place. Mm. It just happened to be Warwick, and I never left. Still here, which is a surprise to me.
Wonderful. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've shared this yet on this. I've done an episode giving people an idea of what I'm about and why this came about. I don't know whether I went into detail with this story, but how I came across Claire was I was working in a self-employed position at the time for, I didn't think it was a scam, but I think it certainly was a scam. But anyway, and there was various events that were happening where you'd go and get the information and all that sort of stuff. And this particular evening, I got a call from one of the sort of leaders, and she said, I think it was down Bristol was where I was traveling to. And she says, you know, you're coming down to Bristol tomorrow. I was like, yeah. She goes, well, I've kind of said that you could take Brian. I'm like, who's Brian? And she says, well, he lives in, I think it was Kenilworth, and he hasn't got a car. And I thought you wouldn't mind. I was like, Jesus Christ, could talk about taking liberties. I've never met this bloke, you know. Anyway, so I was like, oh, right, fine, okay. So the next day I go and pick Brian up, and it was Brian, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Brian, yeah.
And yeah, so we're travelling down to Bristol together, and he's talking the hind legs off a donkey. And I think I can't remember if it was on the way there or on the way back, but he starts talking about this wonderful filly called Claire. And I don't know whether he used the word filly, but
he would have done, because we'll put it into context. Brian was about 70 at the time, but very sprightly, wasn't he?
Yes.
I mean, he looked more like a 50-year-old, but had a motorbike and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was a lovely guy anyway. And he was telling me about this wonderful Claire, and he was telling me about acupuncture. And it's really weird, because I think I'd fleetingly been thinking about acupuncture anyway, because, as you know, my acne rosacea. My spots were very bad at that point. And I hate Western medicine. So I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. So my ears pricked up, and he told me that you just about to qualify, or you just qualified. And I said, oh, brilliant. Give me a number and I'll try her out. Because you were doing an introductory session and five sessions. So that was it. I called Claire, we booked in, and we did the five sessions, and in that fifth session, when we'd finished, she says, right, my love, as she likes to say, she goes, I'm not interested, I'm not interested in treating symptoms. It's got to be mind, body, soul, spirit, the works. And she goes, and some people are going to cut and run at this point because they don't want to deal with stuff. And I'm looking at you and I'm like, it was deep into my core. You know, I was like, yeah, I'm not scared. Yeah, let's do this. Let's do this. And to put it into context, I've been married a year at this point. And she just said, I have to tell you, you are deeply unhappy. And I just looked at you like, what? You know, I'd been married a year. I'd felt really content from being married. You know, that safety, that somebody actually wanted to sign the register to be with me for the rest of my life. You know, all of those sort of thoughts that you have. And I just looked at you and I was like, no, I'm not. I'm very happy. And you said, I just have to call it as I see it. And then that's when the sledgehammer, I've got the bumps again. That's when the sledgehammer came cracking over my skull. And I was just broken open and the tears just came, didn't they? And that was the start of the rest of my life. You know, that was 10 years ago. So I was 36, been married a year. And I always knew deep down. I always knew deep down that I was holding things back, and I was, you know, hiding a secret for a man I was still in love with that wasn't my husband. And the point of telling that story was the divine forces at play. Brian, who I'd never met in my life, and I was forced into taking to Bristol, tells me about this wonderful filly called Claire. At a time when I'd been thinking about trying to do something for my skin, and it changed my life forever. So soul contract, we know anyway, but it was just, there are no such thing as coincidences. It is all orchestrated beautifully. So, and we either choose to take that on, or like you say, we choose to put the head back in the sand.
I had a lovely memory of Brian. I don't know if he's still on the planet or not, or whether he's passed to a different realm, but what a lovely man. Just, he reminded me of a Peter Pan, forever young, what a dear, dear soul. And what a lovely intermediary for you and I to meet up again.
Yes.
And there is always a sense, I think, of recognition at some level. You know, when we meet somebody at a do and we go, have we met before? And you haven't met before. It's the most ridiculous thing to say, isn't it? Because you're standing there going, I've never met you before, but you have to say it. And that's, for me, is when the soul recognizes the soul family group member that you've incarnated with thousands of times over the eons. And here you are again in that perfect moment of synchronicity. And it's like, there's such a celebratory feel. That you just think, hello, even though you don't know, you know, hello again, here we are doing our stuff. Yeah. And it becomes a journey then, doesn't it? And then you become, you know, you're walking side by side through life before you know it. And it's such a blessing. It's such a blessing to be reunited with soul family group members like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think for the purpose of whoever's listening to this as well, you know, that was the start of my unraveling, I always call it, 10 years ago. And literally, I've been telling Claire before we started to record this, a week ago, so I've been single for 6 years, and a week ago, a friend of 23 years who we were in a band together and we still do music together every so often, we decided that we liked each other more than just friends. And it's like, so the reason for telling you this is, like, I was bereft and horrible 10 years ago and in a place where I thought I was in love with a guy who was so wrong for me, and was in denial. Claire kept telling me, no, he's just the catalyst to get you out of your marriage. I'm like, no, he's not. He's the white knight that's going to charge in and save me. And you're like, no. fast forward 10 years, and I've changed so much in that time as a result of all of that. Yeah. And as you said before we got on this podcast, I'm, you know, my heart is open, my energy is open, and I'm just going to say it, fucking happy. We've both been pinching ourselves, mates for 23 years, it's crazy, but it's perfect, and it's perfect timing. So I wanted to throw that in there for any sort of, you know, person that might be in a similar situation, to say, as bleak as it might look now, or it will be over the next however long your wilderness is, the result and the reward at the end is more than you could have ever imagined. So
It's so true. Mm. And it very much reminds me of many conversations that I have with people about, what if there's nothing better? You know, that terror, and you just know at that point they're speaking from the human egoic self of fear. Why don't I stay with this? Because this is what I know, I can manage it. But if I ditch this, what if there's nothing better? And the fear then just, you know, you can feel the contraction in the energy field. Mm. And then suddenly, you know, the potential, the any degree of optimism or hopefulness just is extinguished in the moment through a tsunami of fear. And then we just look at, if they want to, we'll go into a more philosophical conversation about, well, let's look at joy. And I do believe that humans are hardwired for joy, because it's the soul in the human form that is just the radiating frequency of joy. And we work very hard as humans to annihilate joy,
yeah,
on a daily basis. You know, give us a choice, and we'd, you know, we'd rather shoot somebody down off a pedestal that we've put them in than applaud them up there and say, go for it, go for it. You know, there's a very odd part of human behavior that almost feels we are unworthy of joy.
Mm.
And I think part of this outward bound, you know, you're going away from true self, soul self, exploring what it's like to be human, made a very, very challenging incarnation opportunity. And then we get to the point of joylessness. And I think we could all put a finger in a map of our timeline and say, where did I feel the most lack of joy? Right there. And that was the beginning of the turnaround and heading for home, because home is joy. That's, for me, that's, it's just so simple. So if you're in a joyless situation, yes, it's familiar. Yes, you've developed coping strategies. Yes, your material needs might well be met. You have a roof over your head, there's a combined income, you know, you're not going to be evicted, you're not going to be starving. It's safe, it's predictable, it's a slow death, but it's, you know, but it's all of those things. We'll compromise to the hilt and we'll just stay there, because the thought of not even having that is just too overwhelming. So we'll stay. But what I say, what I try to convey, my belief is that if we're naturally hardwired for joy, surely the worst that can happen is that we'll feel the same lack of joy. That there cannot be a worse scenario than the one that we're in. So what is the risk of leaving that? Because if we have the courage to take that leap of faith, and to just say, oh, that's it, no more, I'm not settling, I'm going for this. The very worst thing that can happen is you'll get the same. Well, you know how to deal with that. You've got your strategies, you've been perfecting them over the last 35, 42 years, you know, no risk at all. You'll attract the same sort of bloke with the same sort of situation, and you'll just, you know, sneak them on like a pair of comfortable slippers, and you'll go, oh, well, here I am again then. But there's no risk to it, because you've reached the zenith of your lack of joy. So if we can just do it, the chances are, on paper, we're going to find a bit more joy. And if we're going to find a bit more joy, whatever that life looks like, and it might feel insecure, it might feel a bit chaotic, there might be concerns about the material security, but actually, if we're feeling it, if we're feeling the joy, we'll be in a place where we can manage all of that stuff. Because the joyful vibration is a higher vibration. And when we're operating from a higher vibration, we're much more expansive, we're more open, we're more receptive, we're a much more fertile ground on which things can grow, rather than the barren soil of where we've stayed for the, you know, the rocky landscape, Martian landscape for the last 40 odd years. We're actually on a place of potential fertility. Why would we not go there?
No.
It can't be worse. It can only ever be the same as what we've left. But actually, the chances are, overwhelmingly, the odds are in our favour of finding a much more joyful life. So why would we not do that? And the two questions I invite people to ask of themselves when we're stuck in this endless spin cycle. Well, if I did that, oh, I can't do that because that, you know, so then we come back to the beginning. Oh, I want to go, but if I go, I won't have this. Oh, we're back to the beginning. And I say, just ask yourself the two questions. How does it serve me to stay in this place of joylessness?
Yeah.
For what purpose would I choose to stay? Always reminding ourselves that we are always empowered. We have, you know, we are divine beings who can make choices in life. The perception of being a victim is purely that, a victim. It's a choice. We can choose to be empowered or we can choose to be a victim. Nobody makes us do anything. That's my firm belief. So if we can take that first bold step and say, I take full responsibility for my life, my emotions, my thoughts, and my behaviors. Okay, now we're starting to feel the power. Now we know we've got choice rather than being stuck in something where we feel without choice. I can't do that because if I leave, I'll have no income and I'll have to go and live on the street. Actually, if we use a little bit more creative thinking, that's highly unlikely to happen. Could do for some people, but maybe they need to go and experience life on the street to really find out what they value. Maybe they've been exploring extreme materialism and realized how empty and worthless their life was, even though they were surrounded by expensive things and huge houses and extensions and families here, you know, holidays here, there and everywhere. Why were they still unhappy when all of this stuff was around them? I thought this stuff was meant to make me happy. I remember as my marriage, very short marriage, was coming to an end, I'd just got some money and I'd bought a Chesterfield sofa. I'd always wanted a brown leather Chesterfield sofa, and it came to the marital home. My husband was away on detachment, both in the Air Force, and I sat on this sofa in our newly purchased, mortgaged up to the hilt house, and I just thought, well, I should be feeling waves of joy. It's all come together. I have the handsome husband, fast jet navigator, I have the two German shepherds, I have the house and the Chesterfield, oh, and the BMW soft top in the drive. Why do I feel so bloody sad? And it was a crushing moment because that was my first reappraisal of what does it mean to be happy? What does it take to be happy? And I realized that when you outsource happiness to the external environment, to things and other people, I'll only be happy when you say you love me. What's all that about? Then I realized in that crushing moment that actually happiness comes from within. And I realized what a deeply unhappy person I was. Everything I've striven for was not the answer. Fortunately, the marriage ended very quickly after that. And as it was always going to, God love him dearly. Onwards and upwards, onto the next experiential chapter of our lives, which wasn't a complete replica of what had gone before, but it was quite similar. I literally sort of went from that, which I knew well. I've moved the boundaries a little bit, but essentially I went back into it again. And it took me 12 years to get to the point 42 when I thought, it's not that. It really isn't that. Stop bashing your head against a brick wall, Claire. This is not it. This is not you. This is not where joy lives. And then, as I said to you, it took me 3 years to figure out where it might live and start that whole rebuilding. It's classically, you know, the tarot cards, it's the hangman. It's the hangman and the tower. Those are the two cards that I think we would all have in our deck, in our spread, when we get to that pivotal moment of we've gone so far, we've explored to the nth degree what it's like to be human and only human. And then we realize we've got to be more than this. And then we ping back and start heading for home. And at that moment, it's the tower and the hangman. And it's bloody hard.
Did you do the two? You said there's two questions you ask your clients. Did you do the two questions?
How does it serve you?
Yeah.
And for what purpose would I? How does it serve me to stay in this situation? And for what purpose would I choose to stay in this situation? It's very difficult to tell yourself the big fat porkies that you've been perfecting for 20 odd years, you know, the well-worn response. Well, because of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you look at yourself and you go, when you are, is something strange about the energy of those questions. It's like you have to hold a magnifying glass to your soul. If you can still find your soul, I felt pretty soulless at that point. But if you can find your soul and you hold your magnifying glass, there's not a lot of wiggle room for excuses and habituated responses. The old porky pies don't quite do it when you ask those questions. Not to the point where it's so compelling that you would stay.
Yeah.
So often as not, we don't ask the questions. We'll just keep trotting out the usual answers. Of course I'm happy. Are you really? Of course I am. I'm married, I've got the BMW, I've got the two dogs, I've got the bloody Chesterfield, sat in the bloody Chesterfield. I must be happy. You know, because it's quite a shocking thing to realise you're not.
Yeah, it is.
None of that is working for you when you've worked 17 years to get it.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite tough. Yeah.
Okay. So I think that was perfect, you know, the two questions that people can actually sit now and ask themselves. I think the biggest, well, for me anyway, and for lots of friends and people I know, that the main reason you mentioned it earlier about having shared incomes and stuff for the household, I think that is the main reason that keeps people stuck, especially women, because yeah, they're so scared that they're not going to be able to survive financially on their own. And I would throw it out to anyone listening. You know, when I told my husband I didn't love him anymore, I think I was working part-time and I was still trying to do stuff in my spare time, you know, to generate more income. And it was petrifying for me because I was like, how am I going to manage this house on my own? But you get resourceful, you know, and like you said, you know, and in the end I was like, well, you know, it was mum's friend, Claire, who actually I bought my wedding dress from, another Claire. And she kept saying to my mum, we need somebody like Mel, where she was working at the time. And I was like, no. And anyway, she must have done it about 3 or 4 times. And at that point, I think I was far enough into what am I going to do to take it seriously. And actually, that was a year of giving me a really decent salary for working part time and a real stepping stone to realizing how I could stay, you know, stay in this house. Yeah. So again, perfect timing and being open and receptive to these little nudges that source, God, call it what you will, gives you, rather than ignoring it. So I think, and it's also trust is huge, and keeping the faith. You know, I've read loads of books, listened to loads of books about self-development and people's life stories, and one particular comes to mind, and she basically, she had an amazing job, very well paid. And she just kept getting this, you need to leave, you need to leave, you need to leave in her head. And she was the main breadwinner as well. And in the end, she just knew she had to act on that impulse. And she did. And she had nothing to go to. And her husband wasn't working. 3 days later, she got a call out of the blue from Facebook. And they needed somebody with her skills it was very specific. It was something to do with religion and all that. It was very specific. And she didn't even know Facebook knew her, you know, and she just took that leap of faith and the universe delivered. And I think that's what so many of us don't do because we're scared shitless.
Yes.
That we're going to not be able to pay the mortgage. We're going to get repossessed. You know, we're going to go bankrupt and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, that reality just doesn't really play out, you know, 80% of the time, 90% of the time. So yeah, it's having that trust and belief in yourself, really, isn't it?
And energetically, it's extraordinary what that does. And you said, you know, as soon as you make the decision, for me, the hardest thing is to actually come to the decision.
Yeah.
It may take a couple of years to unpick it, you know, and put yourself in a position where you can leave, walk, stay, buy somebody out, change your job, change your career, whatever. But actually, from the moment you make the decision, your energy field changes.
Mm.
And the resourcefulness, the resilience, that little inner voice that we can develop, that heightened sense of intuition, the gut feel becomes louder because our energy field expands. Fear and need are the greatest contracting energies, frequencies that do this to our energy field. and we don't see opportunity. There's no bloody opportunity when you're frightened for your very survival. You know, all it is hunker down, hang on tighter, control more, fear more. You know, it's so restrictive. But the minute the decision is made, privately to yourself, is the only person you ever have to tell, I'm going to do this. It's time. I'm going to face the inevitable. It's time to change. Suddenly, literally in that moment, energy fields open. And as you said, you surprise yourself with your amount of resourcefulness.
Yeah.
I was getting a bit tight on money. I'd paid for my degree. It was a private college that I went to for acupuncture. And I chose not to get a career loan that, you know, you would never pay back. I chose, no, I've got some money from the Air Force. I'm going to pay for this up front. But it got a bit tight while I was doing my studies. So after when I graduated and I was building my practice, I thought I need some more income. So I got a lodger. Well, anybody that knows me would just be, they'd pick themselves up on the floor, because I can't even say the word share. You know, I can't share a book without putting my name on it and a sticker saying this belongs to Claire Taylor Powell. Please return by. You know, that the whole thing, I don't know what it is, must be past life stuff, but it's very difficult for me to share anything. So how to, and as a Cancerian, sharing my space, my private space, and I'm quite a hermit person. But it was just unthinkable. But I thought, you know what, needs must. I thought I can do this.
Yeah.
And once I'd made the decision, and I had this lovely chap, huge bear of a man that worked for the NHS on contract doing data stuff, and he left the house at 5:30, never heard him go. He'd come back in at 4, he'd have his shower, make his sandwiches and go and sit in his room for the rest of the night. Couldn't have been a more perfect lodger. Never saw him. He was a sweetheart and he loved dogs, so he looked after my little doggy. Thank you, God. You know, what a gift.
Yeah.
What a gift. But it's just amazing what we can turn our hands to what we can conceive as possible. Whereas before it was an absolutely, that is a line in the sand, I'm never going to cross that, you know, over my dead body. And suddenly all of our never, 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 never know suddenly becomes possible. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And the life changes from that moment.
Yeah.
From that moment.
Wonderful.
Yeah. We are amazing beings, Mel. We're complex. You know, this whole walking hand in hand as a divine soul of the highest vibration of light congealed into a rather clumsy, you know, human body of flesh and bone is an extraordinary extraordinary gift, but an extraordinary challenge to hold the two in the same hand. And I always see life as a coin, and you've got the human being on the one side and you've got the soul on the other. It's the same coin. It just depends which side lands face up that moment as to how you're coming at life.
Yeah.
But you're holding the same coin all the time, the all of it, the entirety of it. And I feel with these extraordinary shifts astrologically, we know we're coming into the age of Aquarius for the first time in God knows when. There's an extraordinary opportunity here to literally walk the path of the divine illuminated soul in human form on Earth and enjoy this amazing planet and actually learn to live in sympathy with it, in a supporting role with it as a custodian. We can make this shift. We can absolutely make this shift as humanity. If we are bold and courageous.
Yeah.
And we step away from, well, I've always had that, I can't possibly give up this. I can't do without a car. I'll have a carpool. Oh my God, I'm not having a carpool. You know, I've always gone abroad for a year. I'm not going to give up my overseas holiday for the sake of, you know, clean air. You know, if we can just let go of some of these things that we've thought were non-negotiable and just allowed our minds to be a little bit more receptive as to what we might consider doing, that's all we need to do. Just consider the possibility.
Wonderful. So I think on that note, I'm going to bring this to a close. I've really enjoyed this because obviously it's been ages since we've seen each other anyway.
Bloody lockdown.
I know. But yeah,
how dare it?
If anybody listening wants to get in touch with you, Claire, or find out more about what you're doing or the wonderful stuff that you do, how can they find you?
I'm on Facebook, Claire Taylor Powell. So I've just used my name. I don't have a business name. So Claire Taylor Powell, there aren't any others that I'm aware of. So that I'm on Facebook. I've got a a YouTube channel. Oh, that gets awkward, doesn't it? Because now that's just numbers and letters and just impossible to even pronounce. So I think via Facebook, or my email address is ClaireTP, C-L-A-I-R-T-P, no E, ClaireTP at googlemail.com. Drop me a line.
Wonderful.
Drop me a line. And if people just want to talk about the possibility, I'm always open to talking about the possibility. So there's always an opportunity to chat with no obligation, no fee, just to get a sense of what their life might look like. And then if they want to do the work, and I'm sure you were mistaking me for somebody else, Mel. I can't imagine I would have said, I'm not prepared to work with anybody. He's not going to do the whole job.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I know I did. I can hear myself. I'm slightly cringing because I think that sounds a bit creepy. I'm not always that direct, but I know with you, Mel, you know, just when you recognize a soul and you know their capability and some intuitive knowing, there's no point messing around. You don't have to do the softy softy.
Yeah.
I know I did. I was very hard with you. And you were very, very generous with me while I was learning my ropes, to be honest, because I was a bit clumsy in the early days. Not with my needles, I might add, but just in terms of that whole managing the journey. But thank you for staying with me and helping me. I've learned as much from you, more from you than you will ever know. So thank you. But yeah, but if anybody just wants to chat, I'm always here.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Claire. I've loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Me too. Wishing you well, darling. Blessed be. Blessed be everybody. Yeah. Go for it.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode and perhaps the story resonated with your own life or reminded you that perhaps you're also settling for second best. I've been helping people from a young age and realising that there is more to life than what they are currently settling for. My desire is to give others the love to confidently and respectfully know their value so that they feel joy and are empowered to make a fulfilling difference. If that sounds good to you and you'd like to reach out and connect, you can find me at facebook.com/Mel Clark Coaching, that's Clark with an E, or instagram.com/Mel Clark Coaching. Enjoy your day.